kind of the big question on everyone's mind is, you know, why is the market going up so much, and can it continue? Is it real? You know, what's really going on with the economy, and are all of the things that we read about in the news, all of the government programs and things like that, likely to, you know, are they succeeding? Are they really working? And what might be the consequences, sort of, if they're not working, if they're really just kind of putting off the day of reckoning, and that, you know, kind of real reform is not happening in the financial industry and other industries that have been affected. So, I think that it's pretty much a given that the massive, kind of unprecedented amount of liquidity, of money that's been created, that's been pumped into the various banks and investment banks, insurance companies, automobile companies, into the credit card markets, the mortgage markets, that all of that has actually generated, other than the restocking of inventories, kind of the re-gearing up of some nominal production in order to get back to a very low level of stocking of inventory for Christmas and things like that, that there's been very little real lending or new development going on in the country. And that massive amount of liquidity has certainly stabilized people's psychological states, and people are feeling less frenetic or worried about a systematic meltdown. But that there's been this kind of great bottleneck or great buildup of capital inside of banks, because there's very little real lending going on in the country. It's very difficult to get a loan, and the banks are just now starting to face kind of their next major issue about commercial mortgages being up for renewal, and the requirements that government regulators are having on banks to sort of address those particular issues. Excuse me, I'm going to take a sip of coffee here. The authorities are well aware of this massive amount of liquidity potentially creating another asset bubble. And, you know, they're kind of a caught between a rock and a hard place, because if the liquidity wasn't there, then if they didn't step in, the carnage would likely be much worse, especially in the real estate, the residential mortgage side, and consumer bankruptcies. But they really have very little ability to allow interest rates to rise, or to soak up some of this excess liquidity, because there really is such anemic real growth in this country, at least. And so we continue to, you know, expect the government programs, kind of money for first time or even repeat home buyers, and they're just talking now about providing relief to credit card borrowers. So I guess the whole word is that we have averted a meltdown because the government has become the leverage. The borrowing has moved from individuals and companies, and soon states. Everyone's aware of how bad the majority of states are financial condition, with reduced tax revenues. Even the cuts in services are in no way adequate to make up for the loss in revenue, and states are required to balance their budgets, or they can't operate. The federal government, what we're likely to see in the next year is the federal government essentially bailing out states and and municipalities. So that's, that sort of goes in line with moving this high leverage from investment banks, mortgage owners, credit card borrowers, municipality states onto the balance sheet of the federal government, which so far, you know, other than a falling dollar, has been able to sell all of these bonds. And as you know, interest rates are essentially at zero. It doesn't really cost them that much to issue bonds. It's really kind of humorous, where you have, it's like having your own printing press where you get to use the money and not pay any interest. It's kind of a sweet deal for now for us to do that. And obviously by my tone of voice you can tell that I'm not particularly enamored with that solution. It's really, you know, if you take the bubbles that were created by you know, bad business practices, bad regulation, everyone got backed into a corner, the government said, okay, let's reshuffle the deck, we'll take on the risk, everybody can hopefully go back to the way they were before. It's not really happening. Consumers are not likely to come back to their level of spending that they were before 2007. It doesn't mean there aren't other consumers in other parts of the world who will take up that slack, because I believe they will. But essentially, you know, we're not likely to see another real crack until there's a crack in the federal deficit. And, you know, we're used to reading it. I'm sorry to sort of drone on for so long, so please just jump in, because I get tired of hearing myself speak if I go on for a whole lot longer. You know, we're used to hearing about other countries having trouble financing their debt. You know, Argentina, Brazil, Russia, Central Europe, Southeast Asia back in 98. England, Iceland, these are all countries that we've heard. You're all aware all these countries have had trouble financing and have been bailed out by the world community. We're likely going to see that happen to Spain, Italy, Portugal, Greece, to potentially Sweden and Norway if Eastern Europe continues to get worse. Those are all still peripheral countries. It's almost inconceivable that the U.S. could be, you know, brought to task in the world markets. And I don't necessarily think that it will happen in the way that those other smaller countries, because I don't think that I don't think people will stop necessarily lending to us, as you've probably heard me say in the past, you know. Everyone needs us. They need to export to us, and they're hopefully reducing their dependency on those exports. Countries like India and China are trying to trade more with each other than with us going forward, at least to, you know, reduce that dependency. But by and large, there's going to be a price to pay for the government absorbing it, because the government essentially has no way of paying things back other than to borrow more money. That is, we're unlikely to grow our way out of the situation. And when the discussion about health care or Social Security comes up, the projected budget deficits, all of those things, no one really believes that we're going to grow our way out of it. It's not like a given that it can happen. That point would be reached probably in about 3 or 4 years. That is, if we have, it all depends on the growth in the country, and we may see growth, gross domestic product grow at a 3 to 4% rate in the third quarter or the fourth quarter, which is, you know, the stock market will love that. A lot of that is cash for clunkers, the retooling that I spoke about. But and next year, if we go to the expected growth level of about 2%, which is kind of where Europe has been for a long time, and Japan has been lower than that, then the deficits will grow to where we have basically a situation in 2013 and 14 that there's no way, there's just no possibility of growing out of it. And that's essentially the situation that Japan is in today. So Japan is one of the most instructive places to look at the likely trajectory that the economy will take. Remember, Japan had a big property bubble and a stock market bubble about 10 years ago. They had banks with a lot of problems that they never fessed up to. And Japan did start to export more. They established factories overseas, kind of like General Motors and the car companies establishing their growth areas overseas. But with an aging population and a crushing debt burden, even with very low interest rates, Japan has had no growth or very, very anemic growth for a long time. And they're essentially, you know, fading from the world scene. Their stock market has gone nowhere. Pensioners are living on, you know, reduced incomes. So if there's no kind of bold action in terms of, let's say, breaking the banks up, which is on the table now, and I think that's a good thing, then we have the likelihood that the next decade is looking anemic. In order to sort of bite the bullet, we likely would have to live with much higher interest rates for a short period of time, even though there's very little inflation. You know, there's no job, there's no wage inflation because of the high unemployment. There's no real estate inflation. There's some commodity price inflation, and we've been able to take advantage of that in energy and gold and in other areas. But that's one of the few areas where there is price inflation. So it's quite possible that we will not see the typical response to all of this liquidity, which, you know, people in our age group, we remember the 70s and 80s with the super high inflation. I don't think that's going to reoccur. I think it's going to look much more like a declining dollar, higher interest rates without high inflation, which tends to choke off economic activity. And all of that, I think, sort of, you know, kind of wrapping that up, sort of brings us back to a portfolio decision-making matrix, which says, let's diversify outside the U.S., let's stay short-term on our bonds, let's look at alternative income and growth in energy, in commodities, and you know, we're the U.S. Stocks have had a really nice run up. The portfolios look good, but you know, they're very, very susceptible to the technical strength of this market is very weak. So you know, it's been nice. We don't know how long it continues on, but we're definitely prepared to cut back on stocks by using some, you know, some profit-taking techniques that we have in place. So maybe with that, I probably skipped over some of the topics that I said I would cover there in my introduction, but you can remind me of which ones might be of interest to you.
I guess I missed the introduction, huh?
Or maybe I just, you know, just faded from all of our memories.
Right.
Any kind of questions or topics that are of interest or concern?
Yeah, hey Rob, it's Jeff. I would just say that, you know, you mentioned, you know, reducing the position in stocks. I mean, when is that likely to happen, and what are you looking at there? I'm only asking this in regard to myself so I can anticipate, you know, so I can just anticipate what my portfolio might look like.
Well, you know, what we have are we have stop-loss levels. We're happy to stay in the stocks while they're going up, but we have these price points where we're going to, you know, sell out and take profits. And so it's really impossible to know when that will happen. And so it would just be pure conjecture to try and put an exact
time frame.
I'd say it's you know, having a rally like this after a major fall is very typical. We talked about it and I've written that about that kind of expectation, because generally you have these technical rallies, and the issue is to say, okay, let's take advantage of that, but let's not get caught up in the believing that it's the start of a new long, you know, bull market.
Right. You mentioned earlier that was it 2012 and 2013 were potentially, you know, when things are going to start to shift fairly dramatically.
You know, that's when, if basically we go down the path of political cowardice, which is how I would term the way that our political system works now, that's when it will catch up to us in an unmistakable way, because the amount of debt will exceed the amount that we produce every year. And it's kind of like the bad math. It's like the borrower who gets too far behind just can't keep up with the interest as it starts to accrue and compound. And I see that's, you know, unless there's huge growth, unexpected growth from some source, I think that's when it becomes clear. For example, that structurally things have to change. I don't think we've reached that point. We were in that sort of crisis mode last year, right?
Yeah.
Where people said, this is ridiculous. We can't do it like this anymore. Now that it's settled down, people are saying, well, maybe it wasn't so bad. Let's see if it can work, you know, maybe with a little bit more regulation.
Mm-hmm.
Or giving health care to a few more people on the low end, the low income end.
Yeah.
But that's not fixing the structural issues that created the freeze.
Correct.
And the stops that were pulled out, you know, which they did a great job. You have to give the Fed a lot of credit for, you know, just pulling out the stops and stepping up to the plate and using everything, you know, creating new things. But unless they deal with the underlying issues about leverage or risk-taking on the part of banks, we will have wasted a good crisis. If that makes any sense.
In what way?
It's Carol. I think I've read somewhere recently that there's another similar abuse happening, but I can't remember what sector. It's like, oh my God, did we learn nothing from what happened without the regulation in the banking industry? Does that ring a bell? I can't remember where it was.
There's the Glass-Steagall Act, which is what was in place until about 10 years ago. And I'm not exactly sure what it is that you're...
Well, I just thought that there was another industry that was starting to, like, what with the mortgage industry, that was starting to really generate another bubble. But I'm sorry, I can't remember what it was. Just that, echoing what you're saying, that did we learn nothing? Here we are going into it in the same, and there's going to be a blind spot where people are not paying attention to the abuses that are happening in this sector, and it's going to compound itself again, and then the bubble's going to burst. And I wish I could remember what it was, but my brain's a little mush.
What bubble are we talking about?
Well, the bubble in terms that we went through of the real estate, bubble, and banking, and the lack of regulation that got us into the derivatives, and so something similar to that, but in a different sector, and I cannot remember what it was.
The next area that we're likely to see is this whole commercial real estate. I think that's a given that people are aware that the potential losses for people, for banks and people in that whole area, are way over the amount that the banking system can bear. And I'm not sure if that's what you're talking about, but that's really the next shoe to drop.
When do you anticipate that, Rob? What's the buzz on that?
It's happening now. It really is.
Aren't there a number of banks that are kind of teetering right now that we're going to probably be reading more about? I mean, it's maybe smaller banks, but that are going to be failing.
There are a lot of banks, for sure. And some of them are small, but there are a lot of large banks with lots of large community loans that really would be bankrupt if the regulators did their job. So, you know, we're not out of the woods yet, even with all of the TARF and TALP and all of those programs. So the banking sector is one that we're totally staying away from.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, where do you go with your money?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you when you were saying it's just a matter of time, and probably sooner than later, when this debt and lack of growth catches up with the government, with us, and so, yeah, where do you put your money?
That's what we think about a lot, and for growth money, we're big believers anything that I say has its own risks involved, but in Asia, and I don't know, Carol, if I talked to you about that, long-short investment that we're looking at doing?
No, but I think I saw something come up from Schwab about some kind of investment that you just, some chip you just, something you bought recently.
Okay. Well, anyway, and Jeff, it's good for you to share this, too, because I was going to talk with you about it. The demographics and productivity growth, it's happening overseas, whether it's in South America or East Asia. South India or Central, India in general. It's pretty difficult to know how to get into those markets in a way that makes sense, where you're not really taken advantage of by people because you're a Yankee and we have limitations on how we get to invest. What we have been researching and around the beginning of the year, next month we'll be sending out some stuff, is there's a group that we like that both shorts the market and is long the market, and they have an office in Hong Kong. And what that means is that the nature of really strongly growing markets, especially when they are not used to government regulation, is a lot of volatility. They go up and down a lot in short periods of time. So what we're looking at is putting some money with this group based. They have an office in New York and one in Hong Kong, and they make money. Their intent is to make money both when the markets are going up and down, and they're very much focused on international investing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think to make money going forward, it's going to take that kind of additional diversification.
I have a friend in this country, actually, and that's how he's been making his living for several years now, because he used to be a stockbroker. Whether the market goes up or down, he pretty much makes money. I don't know how he does it.
Well,
it sounds similar.
Yeah, this is these are the first people I've ever met who I basically felt had a very disciplined approach, and one which, you know, was consistent with my investment philosophy, you know, which is essentially a value and not really being just technical momentum investors, that when the market's going up you make money and then
right.
you try and run for the exit. I just don't really believe that anyone can do that successfully. So another thing that we're continuing to look at are other types of energy investment, especially natural gas. I think natural gas is the most likely long-term solution for the U.S. They've been developing new sources of natural gas and new ways of transporting it, and so we're looking at investments in those areas. We're staying very short term on our bonds, and
short-term meaning what?
Meaning like one to 5 years.
Okay.
Because at some point, if things go bad, then where that will come out is in interest rates. You know, what we've seen is the dollar go down. You're aware of that. The dollar going down and interest rates going up are the two kind of ways that the other shoe could drop. That is, if you take commercial mortgage problems, and you know the government will allow the banks to fudge those losses, and it's just another kind of delaying tactic. For example, like the cost of health care. We're all aware of how much the country spends on health care and what we get for it, and essentially there's no real reform going on with this current proposal because the insurance companies are in the driver's seats, right? Does that seem fairly clear to everyone?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those years, 2013-14, I think, is when, you know, there are enough baby boomers and the deficits are large enough that I think it's going to take that kind of, you know, fundamental re-examination. It's instructive to watch England, because England is, you know, is ahead of the curve on deregulation. They got into deeper trouble sooner than us, and they had a huge financial industry which has cut back a lot, and you know, there hasn't been any solution, but they know that they have got to really take stock and make some fundamental changes, and I think that they will. I think, you know, we will probably learn a lot from watching what they do there. Jeff, did I answer your question or not really?
Well, I mean, just that it's downstream. It's not imminent that you're looking at doing this. You know, deal with the up and down guys, and at some point you have to bail, and you just don't know what that is. It depends on circumstances.
Yeah, and you know, and it's not like you bail entirely, because the way that we've been investing is we really have maybe 20%, 30% in traditional stocks, and we've already diversified into the energy areas and into international, and our bond portfolios are in pretty good shape. So, you know, we're not going to make 20% returns, but we're not going down 20% either.
Yeah.
We're going to go ahead. You know, this year looks like a very good year, whatever it is, 10, 12, 14% with a balanced portfolio. And, you know, that's a good year. That's a respectable year. It doesn't quite make up for last year, but we didn't go down 30, 40% like everyone else. We were, you know, down 10% or something like that. So I think we're always looking for other ways of getting cash flow. And those are the kinds of companies that we're looking to buy, companies like, you know, Heinz Food or,
yeah, I understand.
You know, we're just looking at even at apartment buildings, real estate, REITs, and the apartment industry, because we see that being, you know, a increasing demand demographically.
Rob, another question here is that, you know, with cash being available, and you mentioned the interest rate, or not interest, but inflation being relatively benign, so to speak, for the short term. Could you just kind of go over the scenario about, you know, where cash is going to head?
Well, interest rates are going to stay very low, I think, for another 6 months. I think the danger of the Fed allowing rates, you know, raising rates themselves is too high. And so we have moved a lot of our cash out of money markets into short-term bonds.
Yeah.
But the danger is, of course, that when rates go up, those funds will go down, and so we want to be poised to sell out before they go down dramatically.
Yeah.
So I don't see, you know, there really being a danger in anyone losing their savings due to bankruptcies. I think they'll recapitalize the FDIC. But maybe, did that answer your question? I'm not quite sure.
Well,
I got
it. You say savings. We're talking about cash. You have cash in the bank. What's going to happen to that?
Well, it's not going to earn it. I think it's safe, but it's not going to earn anything.
Right. Right.
I think it's going to be a year before the Fed raises rates. Now, it's quite possible that the bond market will freak out for some reason between now and then.
Yeah.
And then rates will go up on everything, even though the government doesn't want them to go up.
Yeah,
and that's when it's going to be really scary. When the government basically can't say, okay, we're going to buy treasuries in the open market, or we're going to do this or that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is what they've done. That's when we're really going to want to have, you know, I don't know, you know, it's hard to pull the plug, but that's when these, you know, the bonds are going to be the place to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting. I have this article about bonds. You know, people, if we can get 4 or 5% in a bond, this says that the return on bonds over the last, we'll pick a period, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20, 30, or since when they started keeping statistics in January 1926, the S&P 500 up 9.8%, the bonds up 6%. The last 30 years, stocks up 11%, bonds up 9%. The last 20 years, stocks up 8%, bonds up 8.3%. The last 10 years, stocks down, you know, 0.2%, bonds up 7%. Last 5 years, stocks up 1%, bonds up 5%. The last 3 years, stocks down 5%, bonds up 6%. It's kind of a sobering case for bonds.
Yeah.
You know, unless we're in a high growth period, you know, by technology, by productivity, by lowering interest rates. You know, rates came down in the 80s and again in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
And so the bull markets you know, it's hard to perceive how we're set to do that. You know, you could make a case that Asia is set for that kind of situation, even though their rates are fairly low, that they have got the grounds they've got, you know, a huge number of young people who want to buy things, who are educated and who work hard. It's very sobering when you look at our country and say, what kind of students are we turning out of the public school system nationwide? And I know, Jeff, is your girl in public school or private school?
A private school.
Okay. And what kind of jobs are we creating? What kind of jobs are available for college graduates? They ain't there.
Yeah.
Everyone knows of examples of, you know, it's not that we're not bright and creative and entrepreneurial, and it's just we're reaching a different point in our country's historical growth. It's not that we don't have the best biotech, the best, you know, nuclear physicists, or the best entertainment, or the best athletes, right? But those are not sort of the basic manufacturing, you know, nuts and bolts production, natural resource. They're big areas that we're just not going to come back in.
Yeah.
So that's the case for international.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Rob, you have said in the past that you don't want to have anything to do with China.
I'm glad you asked that, because that goes to the very heart of this group that has the office in Hong Kong.
Uh-huh.
Could you repeat that again, Rob?
The question is, in the past I've said I'm very reluctant to invest directly in China, or because it's just unfair. They don't treat foreigners right. They don't treat anybody right.
Yeah.
They don't. They're a totalitarian state.
Yeah.
They're brilliant and hardworking. They're actually, if you meet the Chinese students, they're, you know, hardworking but terribly narrow. It's very depressing. Very dour. I'm reading this book, just to digress, by Tom Wolfe, called My Name is Charlotte. I am Charlotte Simmons. It's about Vanderbilt, or one of the, you know, top private schools in this country, just what college life is like. Hmm. It's kind of a characterization, of course, as he is, but, you know, our energy is just not totally, is not really oriented on productivity other than technology.
Crazy.
It's an amazing thing. It's, you know, if you look around and see where most people are employed, it's in entertainment or managing what's already been produced.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you got to think about that, because that's where the long-term investment decisions have got to be made, based on that. So we've got to diversify overseas. China, Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand. These folks that we're going to do some investing through have an office there. They have people that speak those languages. They're in with the local government's investment arms. And so it's really the first time that I'm comfortable saying I'm ready to commit some money to Asia.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Because I think you got to be on the inside, and Lord knows I can't do that, and I don't, you know, trust people who sit in New York or L.A. who say they can do that.
Yeah.
So you can temper that, your hands off China now, by saying, well, I think we found people that are on the inside, and
right,
that we can take that risk now.
That's right.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
And just one more question. I know in the past we've spoken about the possibility in this country of new technologies appearing to address some of the maybe particularly environmental problems, other technologies that could address how we really need help, climate change, whatever. what do you see in that sector? Do you still hold out any hope for new technologies developing that would, in fact, be manufacturing?
I think so, you know, but they're small companies, and they're high risk. You know, we have various ways of participating in clean energy companies that haven't done anything.
I know.
You know, and you know, it's that's always been the case with so-called socially responsible investing, is that most of the companies just don't make it. And I have something on my desk about a company that makes fiber optics that collects solar energy, fiber optic photovoltaics. It's a tiny company. There's lots of creative ideas here, and some of them are going to be great, and I have no doubt that. But when it comes to making that stuff and selling it, you know, it's going to be a GE or a Westinghouse that does that. So it's I don't know. I think the solutions are going to come. You know, it's not necessarily a play we can do company by company, because we're not like in the pipeline of the hot new companies buying initial public offerings.
Mm-hmm.
But there are great companies like Qualcomm that we're looking to invest in, which, you know, is very established, has a great technology, and I think, you know, is going to dominate, you know, as the world cell phone usage grows, so does Qualcomm. So I think there are investment, you know, exciting investment opportunities. In the green energy area, I think we'll make progress, but it's not necessarily something that, you know, investors will participate in the great growth of.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be some, like Google, you know, that come out and just are just so much better than others that they stay, that they have staying power.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I think they're opportunities, but they're hard. They're hard to find, and the majority of them don't work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something I think kind of salvages that there's any great investment opportunity there.
Hey, Rob, you mentioned just about schools and kids, et cetera, and about where the jobs are going to be in the future. Is there any literature or whatever I could look at? Because, I mean, obviously our daughter being 11 needs to have some sort of compass for her as to what skills we develop with her, you know, in the coming, you know, years, starting like right now.
Right. My personal feeling about it is that sort of being exposed to foreign languages, and she already speaks Spanish, right?
Yeah,
is that her first language?
That's her first language, correct.
So if she speaks Spanish and English equally well, she's got a leg up on lots of people.
Yeah.
If she has a particular interest, you know, in technical things, that's a great advantage to her. And that can be, you know, messing with cars or computers or things like that. It's not so much that you can plan for a job,
sure,
but that you're developing the skill, like a wide variety of skills, working as teams, math and science is clearly not something that Americans focus on.
Yeah.
And I think the work ethic is also something, you know, not spoiling kids is pretty difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't, I don't know of any particular literature. I'm sure there's some.
That's all I need. Yeah, those points are great.
Right.
Thanks.
Okay. So any other questions? I've kind of, you know, we're a small group, so I've kind of given you the high points. If you want to direct me to some other areas or questions that you might have.
I'm good on my end. Thanks, Rob, a lot.
Okay. Thanks for joining, Jeff. Hope to see you sometime.
Great. Okay, we'll be in touch. Thanks, Rob.
Good.
See you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Carol?
Yeah, am I the only one left?
I think so, other than Juliana, who's probably got us on mute.
Yeah, Wilson's already come up and poked me once and said, excuse me, but dinner should be afoot here.
Yes.
I can't think of anything, Rob. I'm still not even online here, so I'm...
Oh, really?
Except for on my iPhone, so...
How is the place?
Oh, you know, it's actually a little chilly. I put boots on today, but it's supposed to get warm tomorrow. I love my little cottage, but it's very untechnical. It's very old world. She's not wired here at all, which is just fine by me. She's an artist, so it's delightful, but she's been sick and we haven't been able to meet. I do want to see if we can get me at least online. Because it's getting a little old doing all my emails on my iPhone, but thank goodness I have it. And Dunedin's delightful. As long as I stay close to the water, it's the same way I was in L.A. As long as I kind of hug the coast, get to the water often, then it's fine. The rest of it, I mean, it's definitely a different lifestyle and level of density and traffic and unconsciousness, and then it just makes me appreciate when I walk into somebody's office or meet somebody that's got a light in their eyes, and it feels a lot lighter. So, you know, but I sure like being warm. I like being warmer. So far, so good.
Good.
Yeah. And I understand you've been enjoying good weather back there, but...
Yep.
Ready to change over the weekend or something, right?
Yes, it's supposed to get cold and snowy here.
Yeah. Oh, you don't mind, though, do you?
No.
I just am such a wimp. So, yeah, no, things are going well. Got here safely, and things are fine.
Good.
Yeah.
Good, good to check in with you and keep in touch.
Yeah, I will. And like I said, when I get more online, it'll be a little easier. But I did notice that you recently bought some chunks of things. You know?
Yes.
So I guess I'll check in with you guys about when we should talk, and or you guys call me if you say, hey, things are really changing. We better
sure.
Check in with Carol. Yeah. But once again, I'm just glad that I don't have to be checking the stock market every day.
No. Nope.
I don't even know what my portfolio is right now, so...
Well, when you want more details, just let us know.
Yeah, no problem. All right, Rob, well, thank you.
Thanks, Sue. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.